doesn't matter what sentence you say. It matters the state of mind you're in when you say it, because that's what's communicating the most.
Welcome to Conversations with Dr. Jennifer, a collection of interviews on the topics of relationships, sexuality, spirituality, and more, all featuring Dr. Finlayson Fife.
Welcome to a discussion about the silent treatment today. In preparation, I read a little bit of some of John Gottman's thinking about stonewalling, which I have always thought of as a similar thing. The only thing I would say is it seems from my cursory reread of some of that, because I read it years and years ago, is that he conflates two ideas, and I think it's important to disentangle them. I may be not being fair, or maybe this is earlier writing, but there's a difference between going quiet in conflict and the silent treatment, okay, or how I have tended to think about stonewalling. I think of the silent treatment as passive aggressive. That is, your spouse wants you to talk and you freeze them out. You don't give them the response that you want. They want to hear from you and you're going to withhold your opinion, your feelings, your thoughts as a way of punishing them or prevailing. And one reason why people like this particular form of aggression is because there's, on some level, it's deniable. You can act like, you know, look, hey, I'm just trying to think through my feelings. I'm not trying to be aggressive. So passive aggression is a way of, it is aggression, but it's often in the form that we can tell ourselves that this is, you know, not as bad as it seems. Now, that silent treatment is different than choosing not to say something in a moment because you're too reactive, or you are afraid you'll say something you regret, or what happens for a lot of people, and I think it does happen for a lot of men in particular, because men are often less verbally able than women as a group, no offense to anyone, but you know, statistically speaking, women often are more able to be verbal and to know their own thoughts and feelings. And so sometimes in conflict, men disengage because they're overwhelmed. Now, I'm not saying every time a man disengages, he's overwhelmed, and that's how you must see it, because it's important to think about what's actually happening. As you've heard me talk about in the Strengthening Your Relationship course or in other places, that you can disengage because you're overwhelmed, because you're not sure you're going to be kind or fair, and never come back to it. That is to be avoidant. So you can go away, but it's really important, like, do you come back when you have settled down, when your mind's a little more regulated? This is really, really important. In fact, if you're overwhelmed, it's very smart to disengage, especially if you're losing it and you're aggressive, or you're so overwhelmed you can't think straight. Then it's very valuable, and Gottman actually talks about this a lot, to disengage until you can calm down, but importantly that you come back to the issue when your mind is calmer, when you're a little more clear. Maybe you talk to a friend or a counselor or God, you know, but the goal is to sort out your own thoughts, to confront your own part in the problem and come back in a clearer way. And some people will do what I think Gottman would call stonewalling, which is just that they don't come back to it. That's still different than the passive-aggressive silent treatment of knowing that your partner wants your engagement and you take pleasure in not giving it to them. So the silent treatment has cruel intent, which is different than overwhelm or avoidance, okay? So men are more likely to disengage because they're overwhelmed. Gottman does refer to this as stonewall or go silent. But when women do it, it is more predictive of divorce. And I think that is because, and this is the variable that I wish he were measuring more explicitly, is it just going quiet or is it to punish? Because when it's at that level of contempt, of course, that's very hard on a marriage and on a partnership, that it's bordering on emotional abuse, right? So again, are you trying to gather your thoughts or are you trying to make your spouse pay? Okay, these are two very different intentions and outcomes. If, again, you are overwhelmed, no problem. But the goal is to learn to self-soothe, self-confront, and come back to the conversation. If it's passive aggression, then it is to deal with your hostility and your ability to jerk your spouse around, okay? Because oftentimes in the face of being disappointed or not getting what we want, we can work hard to punish through that silence. And again, that has a very different meaning and impact on the spouse because you know they want you to squirm, to struggle, to be anxious. That it fills you with anxiety while making you think that you're crazy. And so if it's about control, if it's about humiliation, right, you're going to undermine your spouse's well-being, their happiness. And again, it crosses into emotional abuse when it's not just about cooling off, right? If you have to beg or plead for your spouse to stop, to engage with you, to stop being quiet. And if it's frequent and it lasts a long time, or you've changed your behavior in order to avoid your spouse's silent treatment, then it's pushing on abusive. Okay, so let me just say that again. So if you have to beg or plead for it to stop, if it's frequent and or it lasts a long time, I had a client whose parents didn't speak to each other for a month. Okay, so that's like high, of course, not of course necessarily for people, but they did divorce because that's a high level of contempt. So if it's frequent and it lasts a long time, and or if you change your behavior to try to keep your spouse from giving you the silent treatment, then it's a form of dominance or control in the marriage that is important to see or understand. So how do you deal with it? I'm going to give you just a couple of thoughts, but then I'll go into some of the questions. If your spouse is overwhelmed, okay, and you know that's what it is, or they're not as verbal as you, or they don't know what they think, they don't know what to say, one of the things I would say is to look at your own participation in their dysregulation. Now, that's different than if you would not get upset, they would know what they think, okay? So I don't mean to say that you, if you're the more activated spouse, that you are directly responsible. But oftentimes, when you can't get your spouse to say what they think, or you can't solve the problem in the way you want, as you go in more, you're dysregulated and you're trying to handle it by getting them to talk to you, which only makes them feel more overwhelmed, more unable to consider what their thoughts are. And so the way that you help is by settling your own anxiety. You know you're amped up. Okay, I know that I can do this in conflict. I can get more upset or more, you know, activated and dysregulated. And if you're going to help the other person sort out their feelings, you back off and you settle down, right? So, and you also can come back to that or invite your spouse back into the conversation when you're more regulated yourself and you can participate in a more productive conversation. And especially if you have a spouse who tends to get overwhelmed, who tends to not know their own mind or thinking and is in reaction to you, because a lot of times people who don't know what they think and feel are often reacting highly to the more overt spouse, then calming down and leading with self-confrontation is a big deal. Okay, now this is different than the passive-aggressive cruel. I'm going to talk about that as a separate thing. But coming in and saying, look, I've been thinking about this. Yeah, I'm sorry I got so upset the other day. Would you like to think through this again? I have some thoughts about how I'm a part of the problem, okay? Usually that invites your avoidant spouse more readily to the conversation, to the table. Does anybody have questions about that or thoughts about just the spouse that's overreactive? So can you speak about the anxious avoidant dynamic? So yes, this is an anxiety regulation system that is very common in marriages. I talk about it in the Strengthen Your Relationship course of the pursuer-distancer dynamic or the walled-off versus the boundaryless spouse. And both are about difficulty with self-regulation. Both are about difficulty with managing how you feel or the validation you can't get from your spouse. So when the pursuing person, the anxious person, can't get their spouse's validation, they go in and try to get more, get emotional, get upset, get pressuring, get judging, or even I'll be whatever you want, just give me the response that I want. You're sort of going over and trying to get the other person to reassure you or calm you down. And it looks like the person in that position is interested in solving the problem, but usually what they're interested in is getting some kind of anxiety management or reassurance from the avoidant partner. Now, of course, if you're the avoidant one, the walled off one, and your spouse is full of anxiety and upset, you are being invited to wall off because the avoidant person's difficulty is self-regulating in the face of tracking another person's mind. And so in conflict, it gets more exaggerated, more elevated, and so they tend to wall off even more, which of course gets the pursuing person more upset and the avoidant person more anxious. They don't look anxious necessarily because we say anxious avoidant, but these are both high anxiety positions. Therefore, I've got to retreat and get away because I can't regulate my feelings when I'm with you. And so, you know, a lot of the basis of the courses I teach is how to understand your anxiety regulation pattern and how to get better able to regulate and know your own mind, which is a fundamental part of being able to be collaborative or handle conflict, is to go in the face of invalidation with your spouse, which is always a part of conflict, and bad news, always a part of marriage, because unless you marry somebody who is your clone, you're going to face invalidation of another person. You're going to be up against their limitations just as your limitations are being exposed in the marriage. And that is dysregulating. And so if you handle that by trying to get reassurance or you handle it by trying to take distance, you're going to be in a power struggle, which for many people defines the marriage. So what Gottman says about this is if you know that you're highly dysregulated and you know your blood pressure's up, they do a lot of measures of couples, and when their blood pressure's up, their heart rate's up, they're amped up, they are regressed, okay? Then you want to stop talking because you're no longer using your prefrontal, you're in your limbic, and you're in more of a fight or flight position, and you may feel like you understand what's going on and you finally get what needs to be said to your spouse. But in reality, as my son Graham says, anger makes you stupid. So you actually are less able to handle the conflict than you think you are. So again, one may think I'm more mature than my spouse because I don't get all upset and angry, or I'm more mature because I don't avoid. But they're both dependent positions, and one triggers the other. And so the more you can recognize your own difficulty handling your own view or your own thoughts, and the more you can understand you may have difficulty in actually handling your role in the conflict, the more able you are to actually be productive and to sort out what's actually happening. What if you just don't want to say anything because it seems like everything you say gets turned against you? Okay. If that's true, it means you're with a mind twister. And that's a very good point. So sometimes people are overwhelmed because they are with somebody that isn't actually trying to deal with what's true. They're trying to prevail. Now, a lot of human beings do this. That is, they get the argument or the issue and they put it on the turf that they can prevail on. So, I'm at my mom's and there's like a dog bark fest going on downstairs. I don't know who's delivering something, but I guess it's upsetting. So a lot of times when we want to prevail in an argument, we screw with reality. We screw with what's true. We screw with what needs to be dealt with. And instead we put it where we know we can win. Well, you think I was bad. What about when you did A, B, C, and D last year? That really hurt me and that really made me feel bad. And you get it into the place where you know you can dodge your responsibility in an issue and dodge what you need to deal with that your spouse is bringing up. So if you're with somebody who keeps screwing with reality, you want to see it and you want to be able to name it. And it's similar to this issue of when it's punitive, the stonewalling. I don't have kind of easy answers to give you. I certainly don't have an easy checklist to give you. There's not a technique to give you that will make them stop doing it, because they have to decide or figure out if they're going to self-confront and deal with their behavior. What you can do when you're on the other side of that bad faith behavior is name it for what it is, and to not imagine that there's a way you're going to prove to them or convince them that they should be better. It's a little bit like touching the tar baby, like where if somebody is trying to prevail over you through the silent treatment or through twisting reality, the more you try to show them that they're doing it and trying to prove it to them, the more that they know that they're holding the puppet strings, right? That is to say, the more they won't be convinced because it goes against that regressive agenda. Now, I'm not saying these are horrifying human beings. Like, when we're under pressure, we often do indecent things. When we can't get what we want, we often go and shift the argument to the turf that we can win on, okay? So a lot of us do this kind of stuff, okay? This is not just, you know, the darkest people among us. We can all do these kinds of indecent things. But if you're with someone who's acting in bad faith and continues to act in bad faith, the differentiation, the growth is in seeing it and not pretending that you're going to convince them to do differently. What you want is to not allow their mind to prevail over your mind. And this is something that you have unilateral control over. So if someone keeps pulling it onto other turf, let's say that, and then we'll go to the silent treatment, then you'd say, I did do that a year ago. I know it was hurtful, okay? And I'm talking about this issue, okay? You keep your mind on the issue that needs to be dealt with, and you keep in the conversation while naming what they're doing, right? I know you'd rather talk about this, but we need to talk about this, in my view. I know you don't want to deal with what I'm saying, but this is my honest view of what's happening between us. So you're working essentially to self-regulate when you cannot get your spouse's validation. And your goal is not to prove it to their mind. Your goal is to hold on to your mind in front of their mind, which is different. Your goal is to not get disorganized by their mind and to stay organized in front of them. That is an act of differentiation, and allows, or at least pressures, the relationship to grow up, or for your spouse to see themselves. Because if you buy into their mind or try to convince them that they're in the wrong mind, it means that you stay at a dependent place in the marriage. Now, I'm sure that's not super clear to some people, unless you've listened to me a lot, but all right. Says, the longest my ex-husband would give me the silent treatment was 2 months. I would spend that time, and not a shocker that it's an ex-husband, which is probably a good thing. I would spend that time trying to do what he wanted to, quote, fix our marriage. Exactly. I know that isn't healthy. At the end of our marriage, I was indifferent towards his silent treatment. I didn't care anymore. What is the best way to approach the silent treatment? Okay, good. How can you become silent treatment proof? You can't. If someone wants to give you the silent treatment, they can, right? If someone wants to be abusive, they're going to try to pull it off unless they're willing to look at themselves. However, what is saying is that she, in the beginning, it would affect her behavior. It would give him the control he wanted. What I'm imagining happened is that she started to recognize there's no amount of conformity, there's no amount of keeping him happy that actually turns this into a good marriage. Because that's often the fantasy, is that it's a control fantasy. This person, I'm going to control her by giving her the silent treatment. And this person says, I'm going to get the control I want, the validation I want, the approval I want, by doing what will make him happy. The thing is, you realize it doesn't actually ever get you anywhere, because they need to stay unhappy with you. They need to stay punishing of you to keep having the control they want in the marriage. The only control you have, essentially, is that you deprive them of the reaction that they seek. That
you get busy and you do other things. Now, you have to be careful because you can do this as another version of passive aggression. Like, I'm just going to make you pay for making me pay. And that's not as differentiated as it may look. It's really actually about being in a power struggle and wanting the other person to suffer. And so a differentiated move is more to say, I see that my spouse is doing this, is willing to try to manipulate me into the behaviors that they want. And I need to grow out of any fantasy that they're going to love me if they get enough control over me. And so I'm going to always deal with what is my responsibility in this conflict. I will always deal with where I was wrong, because it's always right for me to do that. But I won't pretend that what they're doing isn't what it is, cruel, indecent, and unfair. So you can say, you know, I was telling my daughter about an interaction with somebody that I had some interest in when I was dating. And he was a guy who wanted to prevail as a way of being in relationship to a woman. So he would do a lot to create anxiety in me and to try and undermine my, to always be the one on top, essentially, in terms of like imagining that I'm sort of regulating around him. This was a very short-lived thing because I didn't want anything to do with it. But there was this one point where he kept playing practical jokes. They were not fun practical jokes. They were mean practical jokes. And so I played one back and I got him really good. And then he went into this silent treatment. And my response to him was, I hope this is your idea of a joke, because if it's not, it means you're an extremely immature person. And it's very unattractive. And of course he snapped down and said, oh no, it was a joke. But it obviously wasn't a joke. And so that is to say, what I was saying is I won't do that game. I'm not willing to be with somebody who needs to be in that position, because why would I do that to myself? It's much harder, of course, if you're married and you built a life with this person. It's harder to see it for what it is. You can imagine, well, maybe if I try a little harder, or I, you know, I apologize, or I do something, then they will like me, rather than recognizing it what it is. Okay. Can you give an example of how you hold on to your mind in front of them? That was one. Of course, this was not somebody that I had any deep investment with, so it's easier. But you're owning what you see. So, Christy, do you want to get on and be a manipulative spouse? I'm just trying to think how I can sort of show it of how one holds on to their mind. Okay, Christy, let's make the scenario be that you're never happy with anything I do. And you're trying to make the case that if I would do more of what you wanted, that then the marriage would be much better. Just go on a bit of a monologue about what a crap wife I am.
It's really frustrating when I come home and, you know, I expect dinner on the table and I work really, really hard. And I just think it's frustrating that you're not living up to your end of the agreement. Jennifer,
what do you mean that I'm not living up to my end of the agreement? In what way?
I mean, I kind of thought that was the deal. Like, I go and I work hard and you're with the kids, and I just think it's the least you can do.
But there's no amount of what I do that makes you happy, in my experience, that you're always unhappy with me.
I don't feel like you've tried very hard. I think I could be happy if you would put in, you know, some more effort.
I have wanted to believe that for so long. I have wanted to believe if I do what you want, that it would make you love me.
It will.
Yeah. But I think I'm understanding that that's not true, and that's really painful for me to understand. Because I've wanted to be loved by you. I've wanted you to accept me. And so I'd much rather, I really love the idea that if I were to please you, that then that respect would be forthcoming, but I'm starting
And the goal is to always focus on what I'm not and to always be the aggrieved party.
Sorry that you feel that way. Mm-hmm. What am I supposed to still manipulate? What do you think I could do to be better?
Yeah, I don't think now the person might do that. Then they might, because if they see that they don't have control over the spouse, then they might make it look like they're trying to self-confront, right? But then if they think that their spouse is starting to lean in again, they might go back. I mean, it depends on how dark the situation is, right? But I think that I've been vulnerable to buying into this because I think I grew up in a home where I wasn't really accepted. I've sort of imagined that I could earn acceptance with you. I've always imagined that you would eventually care, and I don't think you really do. And I have to figure out how I'm going to handle myself around that.
Oh, I always imagined that you would care for me better. So I guess we're both disappointed.
You may well be disappointed, but I don't think this is a function of me not caring enough. That's not the big story here. Okay. Yeah. So we can stop there. But that's, Christy's not the best at being one up. She really.
Why don't we switch? Why don't you be manipulative to me? That seems more true to my experience.
Okay. But it's good, though, Christy. Thank you for doing it. It's actually, I'll remove you now, but I do think that that's the main point, right? That in Christy's attempt to be a one up person, she's basically trying to make it all about that person, and whatever they say, it turns back on them. But the person that's keeping their mind together, they're not trying to prove to their one-up spouse their view. They're getting their own mind clear. I have wanted to believe that. Believe me, I have wanted the idea that if I keep the house clean enough, if I do something else enough, you will eventually offer me a basic respect that I don't feel here. And so that's about getting clear within oneself, and you can feel it. Even role play Christy is sort of feeling that this person is unhooking. And I think goes into a bit of a, what can I do to be better then? But it's not real, you know, because as soon as the one down spouse is saying, I wish you loved me more, then the one up twists it and turns it into, well, I guess we're both disappointed because you've never loved me enough. Now, it's hard because if this is familiar to you and you feel like I cannot hold on to myself in the face of that kind of manipulation, it's very good to get a therapist that can help you think through what the dynamics are and where you get stuck or how it appeals to a part of you that gets confused about who you really are and what kind of treatment you deserve. But again, it's not about convincing the spouse. So let me just take on some of the it's about regulating yourself and being clear-minded enough in the face of the spouse's behavior.
Hey, everyone. As you know, I've been talking a lot about Cozy Earth products recently, and I'm telling you, I love their products. It's something to do with this viscose made from bamboo that just gives a breathability and softness to the clothing they make, to the sheets, to the new beach towels that I just received from them and that I love, because there is a softness to them that's just different than any other product I've used. My husband asked me recently if I'm selling my soul to start promoting a product on my podcast, since that's new for me. And I said, if I am, it's completely worth it because I seriously love these things. So if you need beach towels, check out Cozy Earth's beach towels. And if you're wanting new sheets, you can use them for 100 days with free returns. So you can try them out, see if you love them as much as I do. Cozy Earth stands behind everything they make, and a 10-year warranty in addition to that 100 nights of hassle-free returns. Made from viscose from bamboo, breathable, soft, and built for summer. Head to CozyEarth.com and use my code JFF20 for an exclusive 20% off. That's code JFF20 for an exclusive 20% off. And if you see a post-purchase survey, mention that you heard about Cozy Earth right here.
This person says, tips for dealing with stonewalling. We've discussed it over the years, but if anything, it's gotten worse. My husband keeps explaining how he processes his feelings, but weeks of not talking feels like so much. Yes. It seems like the process of dealing with his feelings can become more problematic and disruptive than our original dispute. Yes. That sounds like punishing. I'm not sure, but it sounds like a punishing thing. I'm trying to figure out how to handle the situation without becoming apathetic, right? So she's saying, like, it's very tempting to just disinvest from this crazy than to stay in the conversation. I think so many of these would be really good for role play if the people asking a question could be on the call. But I think that, you know, what I would say if I were this spouse is to say, because he says, call me when you need a one-down regress. Exactly. But, you know, you can say, listen, I get that you need time away. That's okay with me. That makes sense to me. The issue is that you don't come back to the issue. You don't come into the discomfort of dealing with the actual marriage. And so I'm not trying to tell you to be like me. I'm trying to say that if we have a marriage, then we come back to the table and we try to work this out. But otherwise, what you're saying to me is you don't want a marriage and that you can prevail through disengagement. And that puts me in a difficult spot because the only choice I have is to struggle for your attention or to disinvest myself. And if we do that, we're toast. Okay. So that's owning your own mind in front of the other mind. This person says, I feel like I'm stuck. My spouse and I had a fight 5 days ago, and they haven't really spoken to me since, other than in reference to schedules or about the kids. How do I approach the silent treatment? Do I just let it play out? The day after the fight, I sent a text saying, quote, I'm sorry. And when they are ready to talk, I'm here. Was that wrong? The context, the person goes on to say, the fight was in regards to that I forgot an appointment for one of our kids and had to pay for it anyway. They said they were angry, the spouse did, and that I never tell them anything. Why didn't I ask for help if I was struggling? And why don't I trust them, I guess, to help? I have ADHD, so forgetting appointments, even when they're in the calendar, has happened before. I didn't feel like I was struggling. I actually thought things were going good. What would JFF do? Mm-hmm. Okay, so yeah, this sounds much more like a punishing silent treatment than a dysregulation issue on this part of the spouse, and that they're putting the person who forgot the appointment in a dysregulating position while not really owning what they're doing and its impact. So I think it is fair to say, I'm sorry about missing the appointment like this person did. And when they're ready to talk, that I would like to talk. I don't think that's wrong at all. I think you're saying, look, I'm here to sort through it. I am sorry for getting that wrong. But if it is to continue to say, then it means owning more. What it is to say, like, I watch you punish me. I see the indecency of it. I see the unfairness in it. I disagree with your position that I was in need of help and knew it and didn't reach out. I know it's disappointing. And yet your handling of it is painful and bad for us. Okay, so you're owning your position and you can't do more than that, really. I mean, that is to say, you can control yourself relative to the other person, but you can't get them to deal with themselves. When you do own your position, it makes it more likely to push them to own theirs. So it is good to get a hold of your mind. And I hope I'm not sounding too negative. We can all do these kinds of things. But if your spouse stays decent and stays clear-minded about what you're doing, it often does push you. Like with this guy where I said, I hope this is a joke because if not, you're super premature. I mean, that sort of snapped him out of it because he saw like it wasn't going to get the result he wanted, which is me revolving around him and scrambling for his approval. And so it did, when he saw he didn't have control over my mind, it broke the pattern. Okay, this person says, this sounds much more indecent. My husband and I have been married for 5 years. He has the unfortunate habit of giving me the silent treatment whenever he's upset about something.
It's been more than 3 days now since he's talked to me normally. I've tried to talk to him multiple times, but either he doesn't respond at all, or he gives me short, rude responses. In the meantime, I've tried to be as helpful as I can, doing the usual household chores, taking care of the kids, etc. It wasn't until yesterday that he put a note on my pillow. So you can even see this person feels their husband's anger, feels the silent treatment, and starts making sure she's doing everything, okay? I mean, that's good. You want to do what you think is your responsibility, but it's got the quality of trying to make sure she's doing everything that so he's not so upset. And that's just more problematic because it's giving the control that he wants. It wasn't until yesterday that he put a note on my pillow with a list of 10 things that he wants me to do, explaining that those are the reasons that he hasn't been talking to me. Okay, that's crazy. Okay, that's abusive. I'm not going to talk to you until you do my checklist is absolutely a form of overt control over another person. Explaining that those are the reasons that he hasn't been talking to me. It's so frustrating to me that he expects me to read his mind and that he's unwilling to tell me right away if something's bothering him. Yeah, right. So if he's upset about something 3 days ago or however many it was, to just say, hey, this is a problem for me. Totally a normal part of marriage, right? To own and name something like that. But instead, he's being punishing, getting her anxious, getting her revolving around him, and then, you know, landing the note, this is how you can get me to be happy with you, is submit to my position. Okay, this person says, I admittedly do not like having sex. Lots of reasons that I'm working on, but it makes me furious when my husband acts like a toddler. Okay, lots of one up there. When it's been a while since we've been intimate. He is easily irritated, often gives me a semi-silent treatment, and is just in a general bad mood. This makes me want to have sex even less. Any advice? Okay, this got put into the silent treatment, which is good, but to me, this is more manipulative on the part of the person writing the question. So she is saying, I admittedly don't like having sex, lots of reasons that I'm working on, which may or may not be true, but it makes me furious when my husband acts like a toddler. Now, he may well act immaturely, okay, but of course she's saying when it acts like a toddler, when it's been a while since we've been intimate, so it's judgmental, he gets easily irritated, often, you know, pouts basically, and is in a general bad mood, okay. She doesn't need to like that he's handling the rejection in that way or the invalidation. On the other hand, what she's doing, in my opinion, in this question, and I don't know if this captures the marriage or not, is she's making his bad behavior the focus to not deal with her behavior in the dynamic between them. So she goes from this question, it to me is like, I take your bad behavior, gives me a pass around mine. And so, yes, he's behaving immaturely, but she is also, and it's a system that doesn't get solved unless you deal with yourself. Okay. Let me see what some people are saying here. Is it fair to ask your spouse for an end time to their disengagement? Yeah, I think so. Like, I understand that you need time to process, calm down. I need to talk about this, so can you be ready to talk by such and such a time? I always want to talk, and my husband never does, and I understand he needs that time to himself to process, but it also feels like it's unfair to me for him to say that he just needs an indefinite amount of time, yeah, to be disengaged. Okay, yeah. So that's going back to the idea of, like, I'm dysregulated, therefore I never want to touch it. I just want to avoid altogether. And it does pull for dysregulation in the more pursuing spouse or the more emotional spouse because it touches their sense of powerlessness. So I think that one thing I would say to the person who feels powerless like that is to understand that this is on my spouse. They will or won't deal with themselves, but I need to make sure that I'm dealing with my dysregulation and being fair. That's just such a big deal because it doesn't matter what sentence you say. It matters the state of mind you're in when you say it.
because that's what's communicating the most. It's one thing to say, well, tell me when you want to come back to this. Give me a time, you know, because you never deal with anything and you're activated and aggressive versus to calm yourself down and then to come in and say, I know these are hard topics for you. I know that I often get emotional and I care about you. And I really do want us to try and solve it. And I wonder if you would be open to thinking through it again tonight. And I have some thoughts about my role in the problem and I feel in a better position. Would you be willing? So you're inviting them into the conversation, but you're also giving them a signal that you're not just going to have the same conversation as before, that you are also settling your mind down and in more of a position to be productive. Now, I want to be clear that I'm not saying that the more overtly upset spouse is causing the problem in the more walled off spouse necessarily. Sometimes that's true, but it's a mutual dysregulation problem. And so you don't handle it by trying to get control of your spouse. You handle it by getting deeper control of yourself in that invalidation. That is how development happens, is you get more able to handle your own mind when you can't get your spouse to comply with what you want and you stay productive in that. Is there a difference in how one might deal with silent treatment born of chronic disinvestment? Yeah, that's a good question. Rather than from overt punishment? Yes. So what Gottman would say about that, and I'm trying to think who else, I think someone, Terry Wheel says this, I think, is that those are two different things. I think, yes, Terry Wheel that talks about this. One is withdrawal, which is the disinvestment in a marriage versus punishment. Punishment is actually more hopeful. I don't mean to say that you have to like it, but it's you still want your spouse to squirm. You still want them to be uncomfortable. You want them to feel bad that you're not, you know, giving them approval. And so you're still really invested in their response, where if you really just don't care, you truly are disinvesting. Well, that's really the death knell of a marriage, according to Gottman's research, is that you're not even trying and you are doing your own thing and you don't even care if it has a negative impact. That's like when you really aren't letting the other person's mind matter. Punishment is, I need you to feel bad for me to feel strong. I need you, you know, I care about whether or not you're struggling to get my approval. Says, understanding that my husband wants and truly needs time to process has been such a touchstone for us. I am learning to self-soothe. I don't need his immediate words to make me feel good because often that is really what I want. Exactly. Yeah, it's one thing like, I need to solve this now, which is often, I want to feel clear that we're okay because I have a hard time regulating myself. It's a different idea than I need to self-soothe, self-regulate, and come back when I can hold up, you know, my half of the deal. I can trick myself into thinking I want to hear his point of view when really I want him to give me words that make me feel better. Absolutely. I know this position myself. Taking time allows us to control ourselves, exactly, and to look at our part. One of the things I talk about in the SYR course is that before you open your mouth in conflict, so I talk about, you know, how do you have more production? What are all the losing things we do? What are all the sort of natural man responses versus coming in a more productive way? And the way we come in more productively is we get out of our reactive mind into a wiser mind. And in a wiser mind, we're looking at not just what our spouse is doing, but who are we relative to that dynamic? What is the dynamic going on and what is my part in it? And you're pushing yourself to get out of a self-justification, but into a wiser position, a position that accounts for more reality. Because then when you come back into that conversation, you're not just trying to get your spouse to agree with your regressed point of view. You're able to bring more truth into the conversation, truth about yourself. You're able to take more responsibility for your part in the problem. As Einstein said, you can't solve a problem at the level of intelligence at which the problem was created. You have to bring your intelligence up. And so to bring your intelligence up means you have to look at your own limitations, honestly, and at your own contributions to the conflict or area of struggle And that's often what leads the way to a spouse who can engage differently and better because they watch you doing it. Of course, as you know, it's not a guarantee that they'll do it better, but it's a lot harder to pull off your shenanigans if your spouse isn't acting in a complicit way, right? If they're bringing their courageous self, they're bringing more honesty, you're like, dang it, you know, like now I have to actually lead with my honesty and I need to be fair. It's the worst, okay? Okay, I'll just read this one in case this is, so we just have a couple more minutes. But I'm the higher desire partner. We've been married 8 years. We started having sex once a week, then probably every 10 to 14 days, then several times a year. Now we go 3 to 4 weeks without any sex, and then it seems like somehow we snap out of it and go back to 10 to 14 days. The 3 to 4 week periods are very hard for me. I feel a lack of love, like our marriage is falling apart, fear for the future. In many ways, it consumes me. Right. It is a version of like, it's a version of the silent treatment. It's like a kind of like, I'm just not going to engage or give the signal of my investment in you while not leaving the marriage. So it's kind of in the version of like being in a marriage while not choosing the marriage, right? Is a very painful thing for the person on the other side of that. My spouse hates talking about, okay, this is, in many ways it consumes me. I have stress attacks and can't think about anything but trying to solve the problem, right? Trying to get my spouse to choose me, love me, desire me. My spouse hates talking about sex. Sure, because it sounds like this spouse doesn't want to deal with their dislike of sex or their anxieties about sex or whatever it is. If I bring it up, I'm hit with the silent treatment. Okay, right. So if you bring it up, I'm going to punish you by giving you even more of what I know you hate, which is withdrawal and no indication from me that you matter to me. 2 summers ago, I don't know what happened, but we had sex pretty much any time attempted, about twice a week. Life was great, and I thought we had finally broken the cycles, but it only lasted a few months. The quality of the sex also varies. Sometimes my partner's barely participating, other times my partner's fully participating, and we both really enjoy it. No cheating, current porn use, partner used porn as a teenager. Other parts of our lives seem relatively healthy. Partner has had problems with stress and anxiety. So what I would say is that this low desire partner wants their higher desire spouse to revolve around them. They may engage their sexuality through porn. They may find other outlets, but they don't want the exposure and investment of letting their higher desire spouse know that they matter, both emotionally and sexually. And this looks to the naked eye like, I don't care about this partner. But actually, they do care, that so they try to control the validation by keeping them revolving around them sexually and emotionally. And when you say, hey, it's pretty lonely out here, okay, well, I'll give you 2 doses of the same treatment and keep that control rather than look at myself. And so if this person thinks, okay, well, keep trying, keep swarming, keep, you're trying to, they're actually reinforcing the very pattern that needs to be broken if this is a marriage that's going to grow up. So what I would say is this higher desire person is investing in a false hope. Now, I don't mean to say that there's no way that this marriage could evolve, to be clear, but doing more of the same, of being in pursuit of a person who uses invalidation to control, is a fool's errand. It just reinforces the immature behavior. So what it would mean is instead to, you know, you don't have to have your spouse like talking about sex, but it can be unilateral. It could sound like, I think that you have no interest in really choosing the marriage or investing in me. I don't think you have any desire to really engage a sexual relationship with me that has any consistency in it, except when it serves your particular interest or desire. And then when I talk about it, you punish me with more of the same withholding treatment. And then whatever you say next, then that is not about trying to get them to do something different. It's about deciding what you're going to do in the face of that. So it's about naming what's there. I'm not going to keep trying to prove to you you should love me. I'm not going to keep trying to make this sexual relationship work. I'm not going to keep imagining that if I wait long enough and revolve around you enough, that it's going to eventually turn into you choosing me. And it's sad for me because I want a marriage with you. I want a good sexual relationship with you. When it's worked, it's been so meaningful for me to feel that we have, that you care about me, that there's some engagement. But I have to let you claim what you want, and I don't think it's me. Now, you know that if you said that, that would probably activate the other person because they're losing control. And Cece says, Ask a Mormon Sex Therapist, episode 16. Yeah, good. Thank you. There's a role play in there related to this kind of situation where the higher desire person kind of self-confronts in front of the lower desire person around the sexual issue. But you're deciding, you know, I'm going to control what I do have control over, which isn't you. No, we hate that so much as human beings. We want so much to think that we can do what will get us the love that we want. And one of the most clear versions of differentiation is when you stop the false hope, you grow out of the baseless faith that more of the same is going to get your spouse to choose you. And instead you take deeper control of who you are in the marital dynamic, who you are in this pattern of earning love. And rather than punish them or make them pay or, you know, imagine that there's something you can do to get them to change their mind, you start to control yourself and you unhook from the control that the pursuit of their validation has over your mind. Okay, well, thank you everybody. And I will talk to you next month.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, we ask that you please rate, review, and share the podcast so that more people can find and benefit from Dr. Jennifer's work.